and welcome to edition 287 of the NRF1 podcast, because Norfolk knows Formula 1. This is your F1 podcast straight out of Norfolk, UK. We are here today to bring you the latest F1 news, opinions and debate following a simply brilliant Brazilian Grand Prix. I'm Richard Baxter, hosting again this evening. Joining me tonight, we have two times Beccles Kart champion Kyle Cumbers.
Good evening.
Good evening, good evening. Also joining us tonight is the F1 fan with the wizard beard, Phil Gray.
Good evening, how are you?
Yeah, all good, all good. How are you?
All right, all right. It's been a while since I've done a pod, and then I do two in 2 weeks. So apologies for my dull voice on two weeks running.
It's all good. Well, it's not going to be a dull podcast, because we've got plenty to talk about. Kyle, I'm not surprised you're back again. You chose a good one.
Yeah, Brazil doesn't often disappoint, but this was, even for Brazil, this was a cracker.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And we were having a little discussion beforehand, and I said to Phil the same thing, but Formula One teams talk about how difficult it is having a triple header and having to get from racetrack to racetrack. Well, trying to get a podcast out during a triple header, that's a difficult task, so a lot of sympathy for the teams as well, obviously having a bit more to do than just record and talk for half an hour.
But the whole travelling from continent to continent and the jet lag, that's easy stuff, isn't it?
Having to turn on a computer, press a record button, get a microphone working, effort, right?
exactly.
But no, we'll try and keep it to a quick half hour this one tonight. Get straight stuck in, get ready for the next two Grand Prix, which we'll wrap up together. But let's go straight in, guys. Brazil. Now, there's so much to talk about. We have to kind of really start on the Friday evening with qualifying. Now, Hamilton was disqualified from the qualifying session, which meant he had to start at the back of the grid for the sprint, all because his DRS was, and I think I read this right on the internet, his DRS flap was 0.2 of a millimetre too big on one side.
Yeah, I think that sums up pretty much what it was. It was the DRS flap when it was shut, so when it's closed, and Mercedes then also demonstrated that was actually damage that occurred during qualifying. So something's broken. They've then been disqualified because it's broken. Yet other teams seem to be able to change things for reliability issues, which is difficult to understand.
It is. It's very strange. And I think it was Aston Martin, they had a video shared from them, and they showed the DRS test, and it's basically like a ball on the end of a stick, which is 85 millimetres exactly, and it has to pass through, or pass through the gap, or not pass through, or something like that. So it's like, okay, but 0.2 of a millimetre, that's going to like microscopic levels. Surely that could fail the test because there's a hair on it or something. You're talking that small a margin. It seems ridiculous that was the reason, to me, that for a disqualification.
That's such a big punishment to take, isn't it, for something that sounds such a small difference.
It's obviously rules are rules, but that's definitely the penalty doesn't fit the crime in that circumstance, because I think it was only one side of the rear wing as well, wasn't it?
That's what I read.
But yeah, it's hard to understand, because like I said, 0.2 of a mil is there's nothing. Literally in your head is nothing. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
Your eyes can't actually compute that, in my opinion. But yeah, it's just interesting, because obviously you heard all the rumours that Red Bull aren't too or intrigued by Mercedes' rear wing, and then suddenly there's a check on the rear wing. So I suppose, unfortunately, technical regulations, the rules are the rules. But 0.2 mil is just
Oh, this is the thing. I heard the news on the Friday night or Saturday morning, and it went for pretty much a whole 24 hours. I think it was about an hour or hour and a half before the actual sprint was due to start that they finally got the answer through, saying, you know, disqualification. But it seems, what seems mad to me, like you say, rules are rules. You know that if that gap is too big, then you're disqualified. You go to the back of the grid. That's fine. But what got me was why did it take so long? When it came out that it was 0.2, it's like, okay, now you realise why it took so long. But also the other issue, which complicated it, was after the qualifying, Verstappen, during Parc Fermé conditions, touched his rear wing and then touched the Mercedes rear wing. And he obviously then got fined for that. So do you think they had to investigate Verstappen's actions and that caused complications for how long it took for the punishment to come through?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, they may have wanted to find out exactly what part of the wing Verstappen made contact with, and whether his contact could actually have been a result of the damage that Mercedes said happened to cause the problem. But I think from what's been shared over social media and on the TV footage that I've seen, it's it's a lot of grainy images from a distance away. So I think I'd do well to know exactly which bits were or weren't touched.
Go ahead.
It's so hard to actually see, like, so what part he touched and how hard he touched it from the bits I saw. But obviously the 50 grand fine, they Red Bull and him kind of admitted they did touch it. But yeah, like I said, if he had altered anything, then obviously that rear wing's probably not as strong as it should be. But this is a bit weird, sort of touching other people's cars, really, isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah,
it is. And the other thing that got me with this as well, that it's the FIA said, was, okay, it's a 50,000 euro fine on this occasion, but if anyone does it in future, it's going to be a more severe penalty and a harsher punishment. Now, it's difficult comparing Formula 1 and football, but I'm about to. But when you have a referee in football, one week someone slides in with 2 feet, they get the ball and they get yellow carded, saying, yes, you've got the ball, but it's a yellow card because it was dangerous, it was 2 feet studs up and all that. The following week someone does pretty much exactly the same and they're red carded straight away, and they're saying, well, hang on, why wasn't this guy red carded? Where's the consistency? Could you argue that by Formula One saying in future it's going to be a different punishment, they're not being consistent with the penalties when they should be?
I think a lot of it is down to the policing of the Parc Fermé rules, which obviously this has been highlighted this weekend, where a lot of the Parc Fermé protocols that have been put in place haven't actually been that strictly adhered to by the FIA. So they've not had FIA representatives in the enclosures to monitor exactly what happens or not. So I think that the 50 grand fine that was given to Max and to Red Bull derives from the fact that they fessed up to it and said, yeah, we did it, our bad, we won't do it again. And then they've gone, okay, well, here's a fine because we've got to be shown to be seen to be doing something. But I think going forward they'll see more protocol and taken in place of Parc Fermé. Which obviously, if they're going to enforce rules, they've got to be there to monitor it. But I don't think that monitoring's been going on recently.
Mm-hmm. I always think, like, fines in sport is just, don't really mean anything in the end, do they? Unless it's the 100 million that McLaren got fined, whatever, 10, 12 years ago, whatever it was. But 50 grand is just, it's not going to be huge if something does it again, is it?
No, I mean, I think Max gets that in about two laps, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
You know, it's a nothing. But having said that, disqualification did make for the first ever good sprint race.
Yeah, well,
because the rest of them have been rubbish so far.
it really gave, you know, gave a reason for, you know, for one of the top drivers to actually fight and do something. Now, we have to say he really the action from Hamilton on track was brilliant. He really fought back incredibly. I mean, you have to say he fought back twice over the weekend, because he started last in the sprint and he finished fifth, which was some of those moves, like the one on Lando Norris, by the way. I mean, oh, wow.
That was brilliant.
And then, obviously, he finished fifth, five place penalty, for changing the engine. So he started 10th and then obviously came through to win the Grand Prix. So maybe it could be a case that, well, a bit tongue-in-cheek here, but I wouldn't mind seeing Hamilton penalised more often if he's going to drive like that every week, because my gosh.
I think we all thought he'd be aggressive on the sprint race.
Yeah. I thought the unjust feeling of the disqualification definitely did stick a massive chip on Lewis's shoulder, which turned him into this, you know, overtaking machine.
Yeah.
Which just was getting, picking up speed from God knows from everywhere. Like I say, made for a really good entertaining sprint race, because there was actually overtaking. There was nothing processional about it, and it was actually probably more what they envisioned when they set out the idea of a sprint race, of having lots of overtaking. So I think someone said in the group, it's a great case for having reverse grids, because you know, if Max had been disqualified as well and put to the back for touching Lewis's wing, now that would have been made for an interesting really interesting sprint race.
Yeah.
Having said that, Max would have probably just driven into the side of him on turn four.
But yeah, Kyle, you were saying as well, to add on with the sprint race, you know, we were expecting to see Hamilton go aggressive.
Yeah, but you were expecting to get that far. And I think that sort of, people sort of wonder what's the difference between like the very, very good drivers and just the good drivers. If you'd put Valtteri in that position, you couldn't see him getting fifth. He'd probably, 10th probably would be his position. I mean, it's a complete guess, and you know, that's the thing, that's what the difference is between the greats and just the good ones. But also think it, the whole sprint race thing is, I sort of think about it the weekend, it's like, also this was entertaining, but it wasn't even entertaining because Hamilton was coming from the back. But the races have been pretty decent, because obviously the previous two, Hamilton and Verstappen, collided with each other. So I'm wondering, even though the sprint race isn't that exciting, does it then actually create a better Sunday? I'm not too sure. I suppose that's still why we're maybe going to six events next year, and I suppose the testing carries on. But
well, I think the nature of the Interlagos circuit helped massively as well.
Yes,
because it is just such a top-notch circuit. You can follow for the vast majority of the lap, and I mean, we saw Carlos Sainz. I mean, he got ahead of Verstappen at the start, didn't he? I think, and then obviously Verstappen got back through, and then we had he was having a battle with Perez and everything. There was some other good racing through the field for that, which is quite impressive. And I think the other thing that, you know, with Hamilton just going back to his charge through the radio from Alonso at the end of the sprint, where he said, "So where did he get to?" And then they said, and he was just like, "Whoo!"
But it was just, I didn't hear that.
He's just kind of laughing about it in his usual way. And it's just, you wonder what he's thinking in his head. You know, is he thinking that car's got something up, or okay, yeah, this guy's quick?
Yeah,
I think there's a reason why
he was just on it, because Also, I think it's been one of Hamilton's strength over his whole F1 career. He's very good at bouncing back from either a bad result or something, you know, penalties or whatever. He's always been very good at getting a sort of an energy from a negative. Mm-hmm. It's been one of his great strengths.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Now, you mentioned a little while ago, Phil, about Turn 4. Now, we need to go straight to the Grand Prix. There was a lot of overtaking, a lot happened. Hamilton charged through, got right behind Verstappen, and then going to Turn 4. Now, it all started really at Turn 1. He basically sold him a dummy. Verstappen had to go defensive through Turn 1 because Hamilton kind of sold him a dummy that way. Verstappen went defensive, limited his line through turns 1, 2, and his exit on turn 3. So obviously Hamilton down towards turn 4 had much more speed. He was much closer. He was going to, you know, probably get past. He went to the outside, Verstappen on the inside. Now, today, Sky Sports, F1 I think it was, released video footage of the onboard of Verstappen's car, which has thrown up a lot of things. Now, let's go to the race day. Without that onboard footage, what did you think of the move, Phil, that Verstappen did into turn 4?
Well, it looked like he just didn't try and make the corner on the race day. And obviously that was noted by the stewards, who we're all told while we're watching Formula 1, that the stewards have access to a lot more cameras, all the data, every single instruction that the driver inputs into the car to see what's actually happening live in the moment. And they deemed it to be a racing incident, and no further action had necessary. But if Lewis had actually committed to that corner, the only reason they didn't collide is because Lewis pulled out of it. In other races this season where Lewis hasn't pulled out of it, both of them ended up in the gravel trap, and Max actually drove over Lewis's car in one of the instances. So if Lewis had been committed to that corner, or stayed committed to the corner, they would have both been off, because Max had absolutely no hope in hell in making that corner with the speed and the position that he was in. You know, Max has been driving Formula 1 cars for a long time now. He's got the experience to know what's going on. He knows that there's a massive runoff area there, so he knows it's a relatively safe place to play a stupid move and have a decent chance of getting away with it. If he tries to do that at Monaco, he would have been in a wall. Mm. So he obviously wouldn't do it there. But yeah, live in to your question, live in the timer, you could see that he just wasn't going to, had no intention of making the corner.
Yeah, I think it was one of those cases where he knew who was going to be overtaken. He was just like, okay, I'll break later. Well, then whatever you do, he was never going to make that corner. You know, not in a million years. So it was clear, I thought. Now, today, obviously, with the onboard footage that came out, there's been more questions thrown in the air, and Mercedes have since requested a review of the stewards' decision. And I read an article that said the stewards didn't have this footage at the time of the incident, so it makes you think, well, why didn't they have it, and who did have it, and why is it taking a couple of days to come out? So it seems absolute madness. And I just want to add quickly, whilst we're discussing this, before people think we're being overly biased to Hamilton and Mercedes, people who, in the comments of the video, they're Max Verstappen fans, and they have even admitted themselves that the manoeuvre looked pretty sus. So please don't think we're being biased here. This is, I think, the vast majority of the public's view. But, Kyle, talk us through. What did you make of the move, shall we say, the incident?
My opinion hasn't really changed since Sunday. I'll start off with, I have no issue with the car on the inside, either overtaking or defending. gradually pushing the car out on the outside so it hasn't got much room. I think that's fair enough. That's racing. And I always think the person on the outside is always taking a risk trying to overtake on the outside. But I think it's very clear and simple that he had an unfair advantage because he was defending off the track. Either he braked later or, you know, stepped off the brakes and drifted him out wide, but he used a part of the track, or part of, which isn't the track, to defend a move, and he got an unfair advantage from going off the track, and for me, it should have been a very simple radio call saying, no, you've got to switch positions there and put Hamilton ahead. And if he didn't, then there's a penalty. In a way, I'm glad they didn't do that, because Hamilton then got ahead and we saw another overtake, which is a much better way of doing it. But I think it's very clear that he gained an unfair advantage by going off track. Even if people defending moves and end up going off track, even if they don't push the other car off, the track's the track. You know, you shouldn't gain an advantage by going off it. And I think that's what he did.
Now, comparing that to Silverstone, where, as we all know now, you don't leave a wheel hanging up the inside, in Christian Horner's words.
Yeah.
That situation with Hamilton and Verstappen happened again. Hamilton was up the inside on that occasion. Verstappen turned in, going for the corner. He left a little bit of space, sure, but obviously there was wheel-to-wheel contact and it was a big crash for Verstappen. Now, that could easily have been the situation again here.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Do you think that Hamilton was just wise to that and was just like, no, I'll live to fight another lap if I need to? And, you know, he saw it coming, essentially.
Yeah, and also, I suppose, from Verstappen's point of view, if they crashed, that's not a bad result, is it? Because he probably knew at some point Hamilton was sort of going to get past him. If they both leave in a, well, not non-gravel trap, but if they both leave in the wall or both smashed up, then he hasn't lost any points. And I think that's what he was relying on, because he knew Hamilton couldn't risk it because Hamilton had to beat Verstappen on the day. So, but yeah, it's a weird thing where you're kind of relying on the person on the outside. What he does then depends on the penalty. Because, back to the Silverstone one, Hamilton and Leclerc were very similar position, but Leclerc pulled out. And then, yeah, it's fine, carry on racing. And if Verstappen had done that in Silverstone, yeah, fine, carry on racing. So that's part of the problem, really, is the after events of a close coming together is often defines the penalty.
Yeah. And Phil, you know, you already said you didn't think he was going to make the corner. What are your thoughts now after seeing the latest footage?
After every single week you get told that the stewards get to see all the data and all the camera angles, I can't believe that they didn't have that footage available to them. And also in fairness, I can't believe they'd have actually really needed that footage to see that at the time Max held on to an advantage from leaving the track. But the footage hasn't sort of changed my mind too much at all. He was never going to make it. He had too much pace going into the corner. He was on the inside, and from the footage you can see he's not actually really made a concerted effort to actually turn the car into the corner until he's halfway through the corner and heading off the track. That's when he's actually started to turn, which is obviously far too late. Now, so, I think it's also quite important to say that absolutely no one who's ever watching racing wants to see races be decided or have any outcomes decided in the stewards' room and not on the track. But with the governance of having the stewards there, when an instance like this happen, they need to, you know, I think they need to look at it to actually make a decision and give out a penalty when things like that happen. Because A, that'll stop, hopefully it'll stop the drivers doing it again at another race, which I don't think Max has really suffered too much from, which is why he's still trying to get away with moves like that. But also to give some legitimacy to having the stewards there, because they're not given a penalty for that. You know, they're making themselves look redundant, really.
Mm. Now, if you were in the steward's position, both of you, what would you do now after seeing this footage? If you reinvestigated, would you give a punishment for that incident?
So, on the day, like I said, I would have told them to swap positions.
Yeah.
And if they didn't, then a whatever 10-second, 5-second penalty. I just feel it's a bit late now. I don't really like, because I suppose Mercedes have appealed because Bottas was 3 seconds behind.
Hmm.
So if he gets 5 seconds, yeah, that's obviously less points for Max.
Yeah.
But I just, it doesn't.
And it's more points for Merck in the constructors.
Yeah. So it doesn't sit right with me that the decision is being made. It'll probably be made a week after the event. I don't really like that.
Well, either way, if they were going to make a decision, they've got to make it in the next couple of days, because we're in Qatar in 3 days' time with practice, and if it's not decided by then it really is getting a bit ridiculous. Phil, what about you? Would you penalise it now after seeing the footage?
The thing is, with the stewards, like I've said twice already, that apparently they get to see all the footage and all the data and everything real time and live. If they now go back on that decision, I mean, it's new footage to us, but it shouldn't be new footage to them.
Mm.
If they go back on it, they're then admitting that they've not looked at everything first to make an educated decision on what's right and what's wrong. I mean, certainly at the time, it was either Max, you've got to give up the position, or you're getting a time penalty. But to do it after, it is, I mean, it's happened before where positions have been changed after the race. I think Seb's probably still got a couple of trophies that aren't actually his. But it's, the idea of racing is that it's all dealt with during the race. If they are going to, I think the effect of the punishment would be lost as well on someone like Max, who, he'll see it as a punishment after the race. Oh, but hey, I'm still this far ahead in the championship, so I don't think he'd actually really care. I mean, if you are going to penalise them, they're going to penalise them for Qatar. Give them a good penalty there, or something at that point, which again then carries it over to the next weekend, and this argument is going to just continue, and so we end up with a crescendo of both of them in the wall again.
Yeah, well, we will see. I think that it's definitely now the racing is almost between not just the drivers but the teams. It's almost getting, getting pretty dirty, I'd say. I mean, we saw Toto angry, he was worked up. We saw Christian Horner being his usual self. Stewards unable to make decisions, it seems, and it was relying on pressure from the teams to try and sway them, which let's be fair, it's not great. And it seems to be politics coming to play. I saw someone comment on one of the videos saying, just remember, you can't spell mafia without FIA, which made me laugh a lot. But so some of the way things have been going, I think this is just my personal opinion, and this is what we're all about. We like to speak our opinions, and I personally think Formula One want Max to win this title. Not saying that they're throwing favours Red Bull's way, it might look like that to some. But I think Formula One really do want Max to win this title because they're going into a new era with new cars, a new generation of drivers coming through, and I think they want to go in with a full clean slate and say, this is Formula One. We've got a new world champion. We've got new cars. We've got new tracks. We've got new teams. They want things to look different, to be more appealing to new people coming into it. That's just my thoughts, but we'll definitely see. But along with that,
commercially for them, I agree with you. It probably would be beneficial for them for Max to win it this year, because you know, if you look at the following he attracts in a lot of the European based races. You know, the amount of orange smoke that's going around, and it's a great spectacle to see. Mm. So commercially, yeah, definitely probably be a much better option for them to have Max as the winner.
Yeah. And everyone listening, do let us know your thoughts on it as well. Even if you think we're talking absolute rubbish, do tell us. Get in touch. There's loads of ways. The best place to start is Patreon. So patreon.com/nrf1. You'll usually find the full edition of this podcast, which will include the Of the Weekend Awards, the Norfolk Notebook, and NRF1 Pit Stops. We're skipping that this week because we're on such a tight turnaround with a triple header, but we will be back with that as usual in the future. Social media, give us a follow and get in touch on there. Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. The handle for all three is at the NRF1, and you can email us as well. The address is nrf1podcast@gmail.com.
Hello everyone, this is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers.
Okay, moving on. Next up we have the latest F1 news. And there's even more news and some cases rumours. It was confirmed today that Guanyu Zhou is going to partner Bottas at Alfa Romeo for 2022. He's replacing Antonio Giovinazzi. Kyle, do you think that's a good choice?
No. partly because I'd like to see... Because I thought I just don't know how good Raikkonen is anymore. So I'd quite like to see Giovinazzi against Bottas. I mean, secondly, I don't think Joe is... I think there's better options. I mean, Oscar Piastri would have been a really good option if they could have got him out of his Alpine deal. He's decent, Joe, but obviously the first Chinese driver, full-time Chinese driver, it's pretty cool, but yeah, I think there's better options.
Cool. Fair enough. Giovinazzi, in the meantime, he has announced, and I'm not too surprised, to be honest, but he's going to Formula E. Phil, do you think that'd be a good move for him? Do you think he'll get back to Formula One? Because I saw Instagram post saying that he wants to one day.
I think if he goes and performs in Formula E, then I can't see, you know, why there wouldn't be that option for him. Because I don't think he's in his time in Formula One, I don't think he's really made any serious clangers or underperformed. I think he's had a relatively steady time of it. You know, I don't think that I think if he was to go away for a season or a season and a half and come back in, I don't think anyone would bat an eyelid if there was another situation with like where we had COVID and Nico Hülkenberg came in and filled in for a couple of seats. You know, you could see Giovinazzi doing a similar role initially before getting another go at it. I mean, Kvyat came back into it after a bit of time out, and you know, that's more surprising than Giovinazzi would be, I think.
we'll see. And the other one, there's a big rumour that's been floating around, and Kyle, I'm hoping you might be able to possibly share some light on this. Also maybe not, but Zaffnauer, who is with Aston Martin right now, there's rumours that he's going to be joining Alpine.
I've got no idea.
fair enough.
But it would be interesting if he did, because he's always been quite a, I suppose, staunch employee of the, what do we call them, the Silverstone team?
Yeah.
He's been quite passionate, so I'd be interested to see him in different colours, or different team. But, obviously, especially Davide Rivio is didn't really work out moving for MotoGP. And I was discussing with somebody the weekend, I've got no idea who's actually in charge of Alpine. You kind of get an idea who's in charge of the other team, but at the moment I've got no idea who's in charge of Alpine. Yeah. Or the sort of figurehead.
It's probably Fernando Alonso.
Actually, yeah. So that's the answer, probably.
Well, I mean, obviously it was Renault before, and you had Cyril Abiteboul there, who, I mean, let's be honest, you got to like Cyril just because of the way that he wound up Christian Horner. I mean, Christian Horner is to Toto Wolff what Cyril is to Horner, if that makes sense.
Yes.
He's that irritating little guy, you know, who just won't shut up. I kind of miss Cyril. I think maybe he can come back.
I'll never forget his little face when I think it was on Drives to Survive or whatever, that Danny Rick was announced at Renault. Cyril's just face is like the little kid in the playground and little smirk on his face.
But. And he just turned around and was like, said to Christian, "Looks like you need a driver and an engine now."
Bring back Cyril. Bring back Cyril.
Hashtag bring back Cyril. I'm gonna tag that podcast with this. Right. Fantastic. And the other news which I read, which was quickly shut down, was McLaren. There is rumours saying that Audi have bought out McLaren, basically, so they can enter Formula One. However, McLaren have come out and said, "No, we are McLaren. We have not been bought by anyone. We are still looking for investors, as we have done for, well, a long time." So, do you think we could see Audi McLaren? McLaren Audi?
I really hope not.
Impossible. Yeah, when money's involved, you know, anything is possible.
Yeah, true. We'll see. But I think there'd be plenty more surprises coming out before that one did. Awesome. Well, we better crack on and quickly round up the next race or races, because we're going to cover these two in one podcast, I think. So next up we have Qatar, and following that we have Saudi Arabia. Now, let's concentrate mostly on Qatar, because that is next up. Who do you think it is the most important weekend for?
Lewis.
Yeah. Carl, do you agree with that?
Yeah. Obviously, came back some points this weekend, but needs to continue doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I looked up online, and it seems like they, from what I've read, they're both night races. So they will be similar to Bahrain, and if they're anything like the Bahrain Grand Prix we had obviously right at the start of the season, they should be pretty good.
Yeah, I think Qatar will be interesting, because I watched that for a lot of years for MotoGP, and it's a pretty good track for them. It'll be interesting to see the cars on there. It's got a big old long start finish straight, which will hopefully create some overtaking, but from sort of corner one to the last corner, I can't see much overtaking, because it looks quite, well, it is quite fast bends and not any big sort of braking zones. But yeah, I think it'll be. And also at this point in the season, when the championship's this tight, that the tension is a big part of the attraction to these races. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and I mean, I saw an onboard clip of Saudi Arabia. It basically just looked like there was a lot of corners. It was very fast paced. So again, overtaking, it looks like it could be quite difficult there. So, Phil, do you think this could be, both these weekends would be kind of one on the Saturday with qualifying, getting pole, or do you think it's really going to be, you know, during the race that there's going to be moves made?
I think with the big long straight, it's going to really see how effective the DRS is going to be for any overtaking. Which, you know, going by this weekend, the Merc looks mighty at pace, and also this weekend relatively fairly stable in the corners. But obviously, we only know too well how good Red Bull are at in corners. But yeah, I think it's a really, really quick circuit, which certainly by looks of it. And I think that tracks like that do lend massively to Lewis's skills. But it's certainly going to be for an interesting one. Saturday will be key, because, like I say, without DRS, other than the straights on the DRS, it's going to be difficult for people to overtake. And if Lewis is in the lead, I can't see the Red Bulls getting close to him on the straight line speed. So, yeah, it's going to be a big weekend.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to ask you one final question for both these races. And it's kind of verging on a prediction. Do you think the title will be decided within at Qatar or Saudi Arabia, or do you think we'll go all the way to Abu Dhabi? What do you reckon, Phil?
I hope that it goes all the way to Abu Dhabi. Just, you know, it's gone a lot later than it has in recent years, haven't the title? So to have it decided on the final race of the season, I think will cap off a fantastic year of racing. You know, we've had a lot of good races, and to not have everyone's on the beach holiday, apart from McLaren and Ferrari, who are still fighting for third. Then, yeah, you know, I just hope it does go to the last day, so we'll see some really interesting racing on that circuit, because it's a good one.
Yeah. Kyle, what about you?
Yeah, I think I'll go to the last race. I kind of predict that Lewis and Max will win one each of the next two races. I just really hope there's not a DNF at some point, like an engine blow up or a silly issue that comes up. I just hope they're flat out against each other for the next three races, and best man wins.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw someone explain it, and they said if Hamilton wins the next two races, so Qatar and Saudi Arabia, and Max finishes second and fastest lap goes elsewhere, they will enter Abu Dhabi on equal points. Now, for anyone who is a neutral, I think that would be the dream scenario. I think for most true F1 fans, that would be fantastic to see a true title decider as well.
And then the stewards come up with some really random reason to disqualify them both from qualifying, so they have to start in the back row.
Dreams. Yeah. All right, that's what we're going for. Added a new element to it. Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. So bringing the reverse grid by surprise.
It'd be like that one season we had when what was that, 2014, where we had double points for the last race.
Yeah.
Nice. Stupid that.
Well, guys, I think that wraps everything up nicely. Anything else if you want to add, or?
No, all good.
Perfect.
No, I'm all good.
Perfect. All right, fantastic. Well, with that, we will say, and we will return with E288, which will be our reviews of Qatar and Saudi Arabia mashed together. Hopefully, we still have a title fight on our hands by then. I'm excited. We'll see. In the meantime, thanks, Kyle and Phil, for joining me. It's been a good one.
Cheers. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks for having us again.
All good. All good. And at any time, it's fantastic. But yeah, thanks, guys. This has been the NRF1 podcast. We'll see you next time. Good night.